All right. My next guest, Scott Osler. He works for the Chronicle, does a great job. He had a wonderful article in today's Chronicle about the rookies and how they're bringing life back to maybe the fan base, the team. It's really good stuff. He joins us right now, Scott Osler. Scott, how you doing?
Doing great, FP. Just kicking back here at the old villa, you know, enjoying happy hour.
What are we indulging in for happy hour? What's our drink of choice?
Actually, I have a cold can of Tecate.
You know,
refreshing.
I played a bunch of winter balls in Mexico, and we used to call them Tecates, just joking around. So those will always forever in my mind be Tecates. But, you know, that's like the best beer in Mexico. Like Corona's like Pabst Blue Ribbon. When you live in Mexico, they'll tell you, like, Corona, that's terrible. Why are you drinking Corona? But I better be careful. They might be a sponsor. But Tecates are my favorite.
Yeah. What team did you play for down there?
Los Mayos de Navajoa. I played three winter balls down there. And Scott, we were making no money in the minor leagues, so Double A, Triple A, we would go down there and make $3,000 a month and think we were rich. And it was $100 bills, and we would make it rain on our beds and throw all the hundreds in the air, and then we would hide the money in envelopes in the tiles in the roof. So we'd jump on our bed and we would hide it because there were no safes in the room and there was not really good locks on the door. So. And then we would smuggle, what, I don't know, 6 times 3, $18,000 home at the end of the year. Yeah, we did whatever we could back in the day.
Yeah, you didn't have to ride the buses then, right? Didn't the American guys get to go on planes instead of doing a long bus ride?
No, I did the buses. I sat in the back with the Mexican players, and they taught me Spanish, and I learned Spanish down there. And we had a PVC pipe that I always tell the story. There was no bathrooms on the buses. And there was a PVC pipe in the middle of the bus. You just stuck the pipe out the window and you peed in the aisle, and all it splashed against the windows in the back. And it was winter ball in Mexico. And we're on these 2-lane roads that were big enough for one bus. So when you were going 70 miles an hour, there was a couple times in the middle of the night when you would clip mirrors with the other bus going the other way, and it was real loud. It would wake us all up. And we were in our 20s. We were invincible back then, but it was stories for another day. But winter ball in Mexico, I mean, there were some good players down there, and it helped you become a better. Fernando Valenzuela was our DH. He hit third, and he was our he barely pitched, but he was, you know, retired, but he could hit, and he was our DH down there. He was a hero.
My experience in Mexico, I spent about 2 weeks down there once doing some stories in the Mexican League, and I caught the other end of Fernando's career. I saw him pitch for Mexico City when he was an 18-year-old, just before he signed with the Dodgers.
So you knew he was going to be a sensation. You saw the screwball before everybody else did.
I did. Well, he was working at the curveball was his big pitch there. And, you know, at altitude, you can't throw a curveball, supposedly. And he was breaking them off like a foot. And the Dodgers scout was down there saying, man, we're going to sign this guy tomorrow. He was all excited.
I faced him when he was with the Padres. And it's all he did was throw screwballs at the end of his career, which is, you know, it's just kind of like a – it's like a right-handed slider from a lefty, and it was tough to hit. And I would get in the batter's box, and I'm like, oh, I'm facing Fernando right now. And then he became a teammate, and he was drinking Tecates between at-bats in Mexico and getting two hits
That's
a game.
Phenomenal, man.
And getting two hits a game. Talking to Scott Osler, nice enough to join us tonight. So you wrote a great piece on the kids. What'd you find out? I mean, they've injected life and energy into the fan base and the ball club. Really good piece today in the Chronicle.
Hey, I appreciate that, FP. It was fun. It was just you know, all of a sudden last month, the Giants turned things around and exploded. And you know, I know teams surge in baseball. It happens all the time. And you don't want to get too crazy and read too much into it. But this seemed to have something behind it, you know, a kind of a youth movement feel to it and a whole kind of changing of the guard feel. And so, you know, I just went out and knocked around the ballpark. And I saw you out there, of course, and talked to some of the guys in the clubhouse and just wrote the story. And just that. It just seems like something's happening, right?
Yeah.
Other than just a couple guys getting hot for a couple of days or something like that, there's something bigger is cooking.
Well, I mean, you talked to some of the veterans. You saw what they're doing. I mean, some of the examples you used, there's life in the clubhouse all of a sudden. It seems like the veteran guys are loving it too.
Yeah, I think so. You know, they kind of low-key it and everything, but I talked to Webb, and he was, you know, first of all, he's kind of making fun of the rookies. He said, yeah, they're young and dumb I said, well, does it make a difference? You know, and he said, you know, when they called up a couple of these guys at the beginning of the month, he said, I thought we were close to kind of turning things around anyway, that we were kind of figuring things out. But he said, they definitely made a difference. They kind of picked things up and you could feel it, and they definitely made a difference. And, you know, for him to admit that, for a veteran to say, yeah, the rookies came in and they actually gave us a little bit of jolt. I think that's nice, that's a nice thing.
Yeah, I should say correctly, there's a new kind of life in the clubhouse. I was insinuating that there wasn't before, and there was. I've been in the clubhouse. Right. There's just a different kind of energy in the clubhouse. And, you know, I don't know how often you've been out to the ballpark, but there's a different kind of energy in the stands. I don't know how many teams in Major League Baseball get excited when 7, 8, and 9 come up, but the kids have been hitting at the bottom of the order. But it's like we're getting to, when I'm doing the games on the radio, I'm like, do up 7, 8, and 9. I'm all excited. Here comes Casey Schmidt. Here comes Patrick Bailey. Brett Wisely, Blake Sable, these guys, they're exciting to watch.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, one thing I was thinking of is that when new kids come up like this and they bring their energy and they're kind of goofing around their clubhouse and the veterans look over and a little bit of it's like, yeah, look at these kids. They got to calm down. But a little bit is that maybe they're looking over there and saying, hey, you know, these guys are a good reminder that baseball is supposed to be fun. You're supposed to be having a good time out here. And so I think that's another way that they kind of inspire the team.
I said the other night on the broadcast or on the show here that it's like, these guys are riding their bike to the ballpark and they're putting their glove on their handlebars. Like, that's the feeling you have right now. It's like Sandlot.
With the baseball cards stuck in the spokes, right? The
baseball cards in the spokes, their gloves on the handlebars, and they're riding to Oracle Park to play a baseball game at a really high level, and they're getting the job done, talking to Scott Osler. So what do you think of the ball club so far? I mean, they had a good May. I've been talking about on the show, like, what's the grade of the team in the month of May? But what are you thinking about the Giants and what you're seeing?
Oh, I think it's real. I think it's real. There's no way that Schmidt and Bailey and some of these guys are going to keep, they're not going to hit 350 for their careers. So obviously there's going to be a little bit of a come down, but there also seems to be something behind these guys. You know, for instance, Schmidt, from what I've read, I haven't really talked to him, but from what I read and everything, he's a thinker. He's a guy that the big thing for a guy like him, when he comes up and it's really hot, is there's going to be tons of adjustments to him right away. And then he'll have to readjust to that. And then he'll have to readjust to the readjustments and all that stuff. And a lot of guys just, they can't go that far. You know, they just, oh my God, I'm overmatched. And they never really quite catch up. And he seems like the kind of guy that will just play chess with you. They'll just, you want to readjust to him? He's got some other tricks. So these guys are, they seem to be intelligent too. They got some baseball smarts, which I think will go a long way.
That's where the veterans like Brandon Crawford come in handy. I mean, you just say, hey, what did you hit last series? What did you hit last at bat? What do you think they're going to do to you? You just say that real quick to them and they're like, I hit this. Well, they're not going to throw that again, right? So what are we sitting on? Or a hitting coach. I mean, that's where hitting coaches come in handy too. But you talk about a veteran like Brandon Crawford. He's been awesome with the young guys. He's kind of taken Casey Schmidt under his wing with the whole shortstop thing, where he could be a bitter, disgruntled veteran, you know, toward the twilight of his career, and hear this darn kid's taking my job. But Brandon Crawford, I think it speaks to him as a person, and we all know what kind of guy he is, that he's taking these kids under his wing.
Yeah, that's one thing that struck me the other night, and I wrote about that in my story today, is that it's kind of the unseen thing, because, you know, Crawford in some ways is being, wow, if I was him, I'd be bummed out, man. He's benched half the time. The other night he was in there and came up, and he would have been had a chance to make an impact in the ninth inning. They pinch hit for him. And, man, that's got to be a real bummer to be – not. I'm not saying he's treated poorly, but you know, he hasn't been hitting this year, and so – it's tough for him. It looks like the end of his career as a Giant in a lot of ways, and it'd be easier for him to retreat or at least just say, hey, you guys do you, and I got my own stuff to worry about. Instead, he's gone completely the opposite way, apparently, and just goes out of his way to reach out to these guys quietly, because, you know, B-Craw is not the kind of guy to make a big demonstration about this kind of stuff, right? But he'll pull guys aside in the dugout. Like, I guess there was one game a couple weeks ago where he was not playing and Schmidt was playing short, and in between innings, he pulled Schmidt over and he said, hey, there's a thing you're doing here with your glove when you're doing this. Whatever the tip was, he gave him a tip, a Brandon Crawford tip. And Casey Schmidt, the very next inning, went out there and used that tip, employed that, got an out. And after he made the throw to first, he looked over at in the dugout and kind of gave the signal to Craw, like, hey, thanks, man. So that was a cool moment.
It's a very cool moment, and that's what you do as a veteran player, a good veteran player. You take kids under their wing, and you give back to the game, because there was somebody when Brandon Crawford got called up that took him under his wing and said, this is how we do it here. This is the Giants way, whatever it is, in the clubhouse, on the bus, on the plane, in the dugout, during the game. And he had somebody do that for him. I'm not sure who it was. I probably should ask him next time I see him. And now he's doing it for these guys. And good veterans, Scott, they always give back to the game.
Yeah, and another thing about that, it works both ways, right? FP, as you know better than I do, it's great if a guy like Brandon will do that with the young kids, but the young kids have to listen. They have to be receptive, right? They could just be, you know, rolling their eyes and saying, what does this guy know? I'm a big leaguer now. I don't need this kind of stuff. And they seem to be completely soaking it up and appreciating what he can offer and some of the other veterans.
I saw Eric Chavez, and he's the bench coach for the Mets now. We were talking when the Mets were in town, and he's like, I go, do these guys know how good you were at third base? He goes, dude, these guys don't even know I played. And I was like, I was talking to Pete Alonso. I'm like, Pete, do you know how good this guy was at third? And he's like, come on. I'm like, no, this is a gold glove. We're the best third baseman defensive I've ever played with. And he goes, dude, they don't know and they don't care.
I know. That's amazing.
Yeah. Talking to Scott Osler, nice enough to join us here on KMBR tonight. FP Santangelo here. Let's switch gears a little bit with the Dubs. You cover the Dubs, the Warriors, the Bob Myers thing's been all the stories. I mean, this is a bigger loss than you would imagine. This guy, I've never met him. He just sounds like a wonderful human being that really cares about people.
Yeah, and maybe we get too sappy, those of us who are kind of close to the situation and are out there on a regular basis and get to know these guys a little bit. But I think there is something to that. You know, it's whoever they get to replace him, whether it's Mike Dunleavy Jr. or Kirk Lacob or whoever it is, to be the next GM, will, I'm sure, be really good at making decisions. And part of that is just crapshooting and rolling the dice and flipping coins anyway, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're going to be lowering a lot of it. But so much of what Myers did was personal interactions that had actual impact. You know, like the one obvious one is in a game late in the season where Draymond Green was going berserk and kind of out of his mind. And Myers went down to the sideline, was by the sideline, and pulled Draymond aside during a timeout. And he says, hey, come on, you got to get back. You got to lead the team, man. You're the leader out here. And Draymond listened to him and went back. And that was just one small and kind of dramatic example. But he just – the whole interwoven relationships in that whole organization have been so important all down the line. You know, whether it's Steve Kerr and Iguodala and Steph Curry and the whole, you know, all those guys, there's a friendship, there's a bond, there's a whole family spirit that has been built and has, I think, has paid off in championships and has also made the whole experience more fun to watch and be part of. And so that part is going to be hard to replace because Myers was unique.
I can't imagine the pressure he was under on a daily basis because the bar was set so high. With four championships, and it was a kind of a championship or bust mentality. You talk to the fans that call the show all the time, and they want another parade down Market Street. And when you set the bar so high, and maybe the ownerships have set the bar so high, and they're paying everybody so much, I can't imagine the pressure and the intensity of his position. And it makes sense that, hey, if I can't be in 110%, and I'm not – if you read between the lines, it sounds like there were some other things involved, and, you know, I'm not going to speculate. But I kind of get – why he's stepping away. I mean, it seems like a lot of pressure with that job based on the success they've had.
Yeah, in some ways, you know, in some ways all along, he's probably been the wrong guy for the job because not in terms of decision-making or getting along with people and all that stuff, but he's maybe a little bit too intense for that job. You know, you needed to survive mentally and emotionally in that job. You got to be a guy that kind of rolls with the punches a little bit, that kind of can kind of kick back and put the stuff aside for an evening or a weekend or something. And I'm just convinced that if this guy was on vacation in Hawaii with his wife and kids, he'd be out on the sand, you know, drawing up plays in the sand or making calls to other agents and stuff, other GMs and stuff. He's not a laid back kind of guy. And that's a tough environment. Even had they not won all those championships, he would have still been so intense. That's just his nature.
I'm sure he would tell you that's where the 9 and 10 seeds, that's what they do, the GMs. They go to the beach and they don't think about basketball.
That could be true.
Right? Yeah. Talking to Scott Osler, nice enough to join us. So the Draymond punch, I've been talking about on the show since day one. No championship season has ever started with one teammate punching another. Maybe during the course of a season you get on each other's nerves with all the buses, the planes, and a guy talking too much and yapping or whatever. I've seen it happen during the season, but never in spring training, never in camp. I read Ann Killian's article the other day. It was a really good piece about how they kind of dug themselves that hole. And to me, I felt like all season long something was missing. They were playing uphill, trying to, like, climb out of that hole. And all the mental energy that should go into repeating as a champion was spin control and talking to media and what happened and worrying about how the video leaked. I mean, I think there's a lot to that. What do you think?
You know what? It's funny, FB. I read Ann's column, and you know, I'm a big fan of her writing. She's a stupendous teammate and all that stuff. But on that column, I was thinking, I'm not sure, man. I'm thinking maybe the punch wasn't that big a deal. Maybe it was the fact that Wiggins was out for 2 months and blah, 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 these other stuff. And maybe we're all making too big a deal about the punch. It was just one scuffle among teammates. And then Steve Kerr got up and talked about it very eloquently in his last press conference. And I started thinking about it. And maybe Ann was right and maybe Kerr was right. I can't say Steve Kerr was wrong, that it really was a big deal. And it really did kind of, in some ways, you know, what we were just talking about a minute ago with Bob Myers, the whole family feeling of the Warriors and you know, the interaction between the players and the coaches and everybody, that there really is something there that kind of got messed up. It kind of screwed up the wiring for the season. And one question I have that has not been answered to my satisfaction, maybe never will be, is why Draymond, if he feels that way, and Draymond is one of the people that said, you know, we would have moved on. We would have been at least in the conference finals if it would not have been for the punch. Why Draymond didn't earlier on recognize the damage and try to rectify it? Maybe he did, but why he didn't maybe work harder to reach out to Jordan Poole and work with him and in terms of the whole team and all that stuff, why Draymond wasn't more, rather than, it seems from what I read and heard and talked to people about, that he just kind of, it just kind of sat there for a while. The punch just sat there with nobody addressing it, and that it needed to be addressed sooner. And why Kerr didn't step in and say, hey, Draymond, you got to help us out here, man. You got to deal with this. But, and there might be reasons for that. They might say, well, we did and all that stuff, but yeah, it was a mystery. There's an aura of mystery surrounding it still, I think.
Yeah, there was just a weird vibe the whole season. So Bob Myers steps down. They, you know, I guess they had an okay season by their standards, you'd say. So is this the end of a dynasty, in your opinion?
I don't think so. I don't think so. As long as Steph Curry is there, and as long as Joe Lacob is there and willing to spend the money and hire the right people and all this stuff, if I'm a fan and as an outside observer, I definitely don't give up on him. It's getting very tough. You know, it gets tougher every year because the players get younger and more athletic as the Warriors get older and the core Warriors. So it's definitely a challenge, but I don't see it as hopeless. You got Steph Curry, you got Klay coming back, and I think Klay, I think he's got some mental hurdles to tackle, and assuming he can get through that, and if you keep Draymond, which I think they will, so you still got your core there, and then you just got to have a bunch of other pieces fall into place. So there's a lot of chance and all that stuff, but I like their chances of being competitive next year.
Scott, we all have mental hurdles to get over. Trust me.
We do?
Yeah, well, I do. I'll speak for myself. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say we. I think a lot of us.
No,
a lot
cool. of us. I have no mental hurdles at all. I got life figured out, man. I have no problems.
I'm in a mental hurdle race every day, and I'm finishing last. Scott, thanks for your time, man. I really appreciate you coming on. Great piece today in the Chronicle, if you guys haven't read it, about all the rookies and how they're injecting life into the ball club and how the veterans are digging it. So, Scott, good job. Thanks for coming on today.
Hey, FB, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Good talking to you.
All right, thanks to Jim Palmer. Big standing ovation to Jim Palmer for coming on the show today. Thanks to Scott Osler for coming on the show today. Another standing ovation. Raf, great job booking everybody. Tony, yesterday, got Jim Palmer, so thanks to Tony. The newest addition here at KMBR for working his butt off and getting Jim Palmer for the show. Thanks to all the calls tonight. Like I always say, you guys are the best listeners in all the sports talk radio. Lots of text messages on the text line. You guys keep the show going. It's our show, and I can't thank you guys enough every single night for your contribution. I'll be in the bunker tomorrow night after the Giants beat the Orioles 10-2 on the Friday night game. I don't know how Logan Webb's going to give up two runs, but I'm going with 10-2 as a final tomorrow. Save this, Raf. It'll be good for after the game. We'll take your calls in the bunker tomorrow night after the game. And then I'm off pretty much all next week until Friday. I go on the road with the Giants to Colorado, to Denver, to do the games. I'm excited to do that. But once again, thanks for all the calls tonight. It was a fun show. It was a great show. You guys are the best. And like I say on the way out every night, swing hard in case you hit it on The Sports Leader.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.